Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Buckner. We've got one of the finest guests we've ever had on the line from Lisbon, Portugal. Tony Gosling, welcome to our program.
Hi, George. I must say a little bit about Lisbon. I've never been here before. Beautiful city. In a way, similar to the Portuguese are similar to the Brits. You know, a lot of explorers. We had Vasco da Gama, who was heading off from Portugal, as people like John Cabot was heading off from Bristol. De Gama was going over to South America. Cabot was going to North America. So both very much maritime nations. The port of Lisbon here is kind of similar to Bristol, much, much wider, bigger river, but loads of maritime history, lots of maritime history museums. We've got some really lovely markets here. The people are so lovely, George. They're so sort of kind of soft and gentle, and the language is more kind of musical than the Spanish.
Oh yeah, Portuguese in Brazil is beautiful.
Yeah, it's been a beautiful place to visit, and the other thing is it's a little bit ramshackle compared to if you go to London. Everything's kind of it's got to be kind of cleaned, and it's looking as if it's designed to make money. Here it's things have kind of left a little bit, and there's even some big old colonial buildings that look as if no one's been living in them for about 40 or 50 years, you know. So the big property developers haven't got their teeth into this city, thank God, and they've still got these lovely old rattly trams from I think probably the 1950s going backwards and forwards. So, you know, it's that kind of city. And obviously the culture is what the Bilderbergers have come here for. The only thing is you can really sense that it's a really bad atmosphere in there. The people who come along from the kind of cultural, political, the non-military side, the non-money-making side, the non-bankster types, they are, I think, very uncomfortable. You can always see they're uncomfortable having to be in the same room, because this is really a kind of council of war, as the Guardian writer Charlie Skelton has described it. The Jens Stoltenberg from NATO, the US national security officials, British security minister Tom Tugendhat, these are the kind of people who are in there trying to drum up more and more support for an unwinnable war, and what is effectively a complete massacre of hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians. And they're saying it's okay, Ukraine can win. Well, of course Ukraine cannot win, and the more and more that they keep saying that lie, the more people die in Ukraine, George.
Right, the Wagner Group just declared victory in Bakhmut. Yeah,
well, that's interesting. It's probably the first time that a private military company have actually defeated a national army in that sort of situation. So, it's extraordinary, the number of people dying. And, of course, they have a basic tactic now, and I think it's important that people understand this, is that now they are engaged with the Russians. I'm talking about NATO here. They've managed to persuade the Ukrainians to get engaged with the Russians for them, that this is a conflict which is not going to end. They're dragging further. I mean, for example, every missile system that they give to the Ukrainians or sell to them or, you know, lend to them in terms of finance, they will want, you know, their pound of flesh in the future, of course. If it's a longer range, that means the Russians have to push further in. And so the more and more weapons that sophisticated weapons that the NATO countries, particularly the Brits and the Americans, are giving to Ukrainians, the more and more it's going to extend the length of this war. And I think they keep talking about this Ukrainian spring offensive. I don't think that the Ukrainian people have got enough men, enough young men, in order to put into the fight to open any kind of spring offensive, George.
You're right. They're recruiting writers and professional people now to gain the ranks, to join into the ranks. Professionals and stuff are going to the front now. That means they're really low on people, personnel.
But there's something very, I think, very, very interesting about this, and it connects back to Bilderberg, and that is this whole concept of accelerationism. And this is a kind of philosophy, really. You could call it a dark philosophy. It's certainly not a moral philosophy, a Nietzschean philosophy, maybe. and that is to basically create crises. Ukraine is one of them. We've got lots of other crises. We've got an economic crisis where the solution apparently is to up interest rates, which then, you know, of course, it means that people in businesses who've borrowed money have got to put their prices up, and that increases interest rates even more, or increases inflation and interest rates. And you start to get into a spiral of increasing interest rates as well as inflation. So the solution to the economic crisis is making things worse. The solution to the crisis in eastern Ukraine is making things worse. We have the JAB program, which has made the COVID crisis worse. And you start to see a pattern developing. We've got a migrant crisis, and, well, there isn't any kind of end in sight to that. All these more and more people coming across the channel into the UK illegally all the time. So you must, you know, see what I'm saying here, accelerating towards a kind of multiple crisis. And that is the modus operandi of the dark side. I mean, I don't think it's just about money, this, George. It really does seem to me that there is a force out there of which the Bilderberg is a major part, actually, particularly because it represents the political lobby of NATO. So the people that want the war, that they work through the Bilderbergs, and the people that make money from war do that. They get the political people on side, they get the media people on side, then they pat the oil companies on the back and say thank you very much for you are also going to be rewarded with lots bigger profits, as they are now. We're looking at Shell and BP. They got Chevron in there, BP in there, they've got Shell in there and Total in there. I mean, the very senior people from all those companies, I think they've got two from BP, in fact. And these are the people, of course, that make money from war, George. And that's, I think, also the driving force behind this is pushing towards a major, major crisis. And the idea, I think, is to get it's good old Naomi Klein, disaster capitalism. The bigger the disaster, the more geopolitical changes they can bring from it. And also, of course, they can rub their hands and maybe a bit of eugenics. They can reduce the world's population, as they've been doing in Ukraine. But then they can create the solution, which seems to me pretty obvious. What they're trying to bring in is these central bank digital currencies to get rid of cash. And that's one of the lovely things about Portugal. They love cash here. If you wave a card, they sort of look at you, oh, you know, what's that thing there?
Really?
Yes, yeah, brilliant. You know? It's been absolutely lovely here, you know. And honestly, I think it's partly the Catholic attitude of these southern European countries compared to the rather anal Protestant Brits. And, you know, that is what they seem to really enjoy. And, of course, they're not going to be saying no to cash here at all anytime soon, George.
Right. The banking system is one of the topics, and BRICS now is presenting competition for their world banking financial system. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting because William Engdahl's just written an article. We were discussing on last night's program, I do a weekly podcast at thisweek.org.uk from Bristol. That actually China is looking a little bit shaky financially because, of course, they've relied now for many years on this enormous great, international sales of goods and services around the world. The Chinese have been reliant on that. That's starting to dry up now. And so as the West starts going to economic crisis, I mean, obviously the BRICS countries are hoping, they got their fingers crossed behind their backs, hoping that any kind of economic shockwave won't affect them so badly. But it's because it's so indebted still, China is actually potentially, you know, going to go down too. So if that happens, you really have got a major. I mean, William Engdahl, I think, you know, he understands this, I think, a lot better than I do. He's spent his whole life working in this, and he makes some very good points in his recent article, which I'm afraid I can't remember the title of. But, I mean, this is the sort of stuff which is way over the heads of many of these politicians. This is one of the things that worries me, George. The main thing at Bilderberg is you've got all these politicians. We've got 5 from the EU government. That includes the vice president of the European Commission. That is their government. The commissioner for the economy of the whole of Europe. We've got the Justice Commissioner in Europe, where there isn't any real justice in the European justice system. These people are basically technocrats that are put in place there by big business, the bosses, to just run. This is the sad thing about the EU, as I'm sure you know. The MEPs can say what they want. They've got no power at all. Plus, we've got the President of the European Parliament in there. So, but there's five of them altogether. And now I looked at the politicians in the individual nation states, including, you know, obviously the Brits too. There's 15 of them, including three prime ministers, several deputy prime ministers. I mean, you know, you could not make up the incredible, just for example, we've got the Canadian deputy prime minister in there. The Dutch have got both their deputy prime minister and their prime minister at the same time in there today. We've got the Ukrainian minister of foreign affairs, the Finnish prime minister, the Dutch prime minister, as I said, and also the Danish prime minister. So there are some good moments, right? I mean, what I'm saying there is, look, these are a whole load of politicians who have basically been given their orders in there. And each of those individuals is there in a private capacity. That's what they say. We're here in a private capacity. Now, you know as well as I do, under the Logan Act in the United States, that's a criminal offence, what they're doing. And yet you've got 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 senior European politicians in there taking their orders, right? But yeah, we have had some fun and games. One of the guys who's definitely being groomed by the Bilderbergers and the global dark forces to be a powerful politician in Britain goes by the name of David Lammy. He's a West Indian guy. He's a complete, I would call, blancmange. He seems to change his views depending on what he's told to. So he's incredibly pliable, wobbly, you know. But he says what they want him to say, and he says it with a straight face, and it almost looks as if he believes it. But the only thing is, of course, he's an incredibly fake politician. But he's in there now. He turned up earlier on. Yesterday he turned up, and they wouldn't let him in. And he was stood at the gate, he was stood at the door, and he got very embarrassed because there's all of us lot stood around, photographers, etc., taking pictures of his embarrassment. And so he ran off with his bag, took it behind a bush, and he's on his phone trying to phone into the conference saying, please, please let me in. Anyway, in the meantime, because they're way ahead of him, yeah, so the conference organisers had actually come out to the police line, and they were asking the police, where's he gone? Where's he gone? And so we photographers, an Italian guy, Giorgio, actually he lives in Belgium now, in Brussels, but he was saying, hey, come, he's over here, he's hiding behind this bush. And so we had to get the Bilderberg security to kind of persuade David Lammy to crawl out from behind this bush where he was on the phone trying to get through to them. And eventually he was allowed into the conference after a tremendous amount of fun and games. But he wasn't the only one. Even, would you believe, the current Prime Minister of Portugal was stopped at the gate. Who are you?
Yeah? Oh, my gosh.
So he didn't have to actually get out of the car, but he was made to wait a few minutes before he went in. Now, this, of course, is quite a political thing because we had a similar thing with the previous Prime Minister who was stopped as well. So we've had the previous Prime Minister and the current Prime Minister of Portugal going in there, both of them having to be stopped. And this is very embarrassing. The Bilderberger security sometimes is a little bit over the top, and they don't really need to do that. And they're sending maybe messages to these people. Well, you know, we don't really like Portugal that much, even though we're here, and you better start behaving yourself and supply the weapons that we want to NATO. You better get on board with the Ukraine war. And I think that's the message that these global elite are sending out to the politicians. But I get the sense that the Portuguese would much rather just turn their backs on NATO and be part of it, a little bit like the Turks have been doing, be part of NATO and yet not really cooperate, George.
Right. Harare was rumored to have sneaked in the back door. Have you heard that? Jason Burmes added that about 3 hours ago. He said Harare was sneaking in the back door of the Bilderberg.
Well, I'd be very surprised if he, well, he just tried to sneak into the palace, did he? We certainly, yeah. certainly saw him yesterday. He's quite a thin guy. So maybe he could squeeze between a few trees and a bush and get through the, maybe even between the iron gates.
He could.
Anyway. He's designing new kinds of humans all the time. So maybe it's one without any bones that can kind of slither through between anything and then appear on the other side like an amoeba. Maybe that would be a good
plan. Exactly. Hey, how about AI? They've got AI people there. They got DeepMind, the head of DeepMind.
One thing about Harari, he is the most famous writer in the world right now. And he definitely was at the airport yesterday. He came into the airport yesterday.
So
he's almost certainly in there, of course, because I don't know if you've noticed, all across the Western world, there's been a media storm this week about artificial intelligence. Everyone's talking about it. Oh, yeah. This is the Kissinger game plan, the Kissinger modus operandi, is you create the problem. In other words, you know, a lot of these Kissinger friends of Kissinger and, you know, the banks that are in the Bilderbergs, the Goldman Sachs, all the rest of them, have been funding all this crazy AI, saying it's going to be the future, it's going to make loads of money, funding things like genetic modification, funding the CRISPR gene therapies, all these horrible technologies. And yet they're now saying it's okay, guys, because, as Eric Schmidt says, it's okay, we can regulate ourselves. And we've got the solution to all these terrible ethical dilemmas with artificial intelligence is we've set up a little board. And we have thought about all this, and we are now going to regulate ourselves. Now, that is absolutely ridiculous. There's no way that this stuff should be – I mean, there should be – governments around the world should be putting in very strict regulations about things like artificial intelligence, just as they should be about, for example, the, you know, generally speaking, and the say, for example, corporate advertising. How much can an advertiser – squeeze a media company and say, you know, there's all sorts of things that should be being regulated. New technologies, particularly online, there should be at least some sort of regulation that makes sure that people have got freedom of speech, individuals have got freedom of speech online, that kind of thing. And so the modus operandi of Bilderberg, it's like Henry Kissinger with creating his coups and his wars and then writing all the books about how to stop a nuclear war, this kind of thing. These people want to play both sides of the chessboard, George, and that's their game plan, is they're going to put themselves out as the kind of controlled opposition to themselves too. And that's the way they steer the narrative. And they have an immense amount of power to actually put money into technologies which will start to define our future. Now, I mean, I'd like to just put forward a different vision of the future, and that is to destroy the technology, to jump up and down on it, to smash it with a sledgehammer, and to divide up land more to allow people to have more small holdings so that people can grow their own food and actually be more self-sufficient, make people more resilient, say, for example, to an international crash. It's amazing. By the way, we had a protest here today in the town, down in the – it's not actually the centre of Lisbon, but a beautiful area next to the river. And a big old tower, which is just off the coast, tiny amount off the coast, where some of the explorers set off from. And a protest in the park there, we had Robert Kennedy on the screen giving an endorsement of the protest against the Bilderbergers, which was lovely.
Really? Yeah. That's right. Good.
There are protests apparently all across the world today, but Robert Kennedy's face was there on the screen saying, well, we support you protesting against the Bilderbergers. So maybe he wasn't invited this year, George, and he's got a bit annoyed about that.
Well, is Eric Schmidt the heir apparent to Henry Kissinger? What do you think?
Schmidt most definitely is, because Bilderberg is moving away from, I think, from the sort of the Rockefeller. It was interesting because I met David Rockefeller, spoke to him, and he was a very nice chap. These people that have taken over now as the main people of the steering committee of the Bilderbergers, they are much more hard-nosed. They tend to be younger. They tend to be very, very ambitious. And, of course, we know from Macbeth, the play Macbeth, what happens to ambitious people. They just get drunk on power. It's like heroin, George. They become more and more and more. They want to control more. And this is what's happening, of course, with Eric Schmidt. You look at what the way Google's transformed, for many people anyway, that buy into it, the way we interact with each other. So normally, you know, if you're, say, for example, you're in a town you've not been in before, you need to find your way around. Well, back in the day, we all used to sort of just ask people, have a chat to the locals and speak, maybe go to the pub, have a drink, have a chat, find out a bit about more about the place. Now, everybody's on their blasted phones, looking at, you know, Googling this, Googling that, putting in Google Maps to try and find the nearest tram. And while they have done, they could easily have just asked somebody, turned around, walked a few yards down the road, and got on a tram. But no, they're sitting there plugging away on their phones the whole time. So the more we buy into this trust, this technology, the more it's surveillancing us and it's profiling us, George. So I think, you know, I'm really all for ditching this technology. I don't think it's, you know, this dark enlightenment, this accelerationism, what they're trying to do effectively in the end game of this is, and people like Schmidt, I'm quite sure, know this, is to enslave people to machines. They think machines can do things a lot better than people. People make a mess. People start wars. People can be irrational and aggressive and, you know, wicked and bad. But if machines can't, they just do the rational, logical thing. So the more we do what the machines tell us to do, the more happy society will be. And we can all go around as an absolute bunch of morons being told what to do by AI. And, of course, they program it. They control it, George. So that's
exactly high-tech propaganda like machine. It's a high-tech propaganda machine.
Well, that's why my people like Schmidt are now in charge at places like Bilderberg. Yep. That's why I think, you know, people like him are now running the show, because that's the vision, that dark enlightenment vision, that accelerationist vision. Is you know, and you can look these terms up and you can go and find out a lot more about it, and you'll see, I think, what their vision for the future is. It's, you know, it's basically a total dystopian vision, and it was beautiful to see that in the lovely protest that they had in the town today. Very reasonable, a few kind of crazy people, but it was a lovely, it was mostly really nice, a vision for the future, which is much more soft like the Portuguese rather than hard and sharp and hard. Like the, you know, Brits supporting the Ukraine war and people like Schmidt trying to dominate the whole world using his Google technologies.
Oh, they asked the AI a question about vaccines, whether they killed anybody. He said, no, it didn't kill anybody. None of the vaccines killed anybody. That was the answer. See, that's propaganda.
Well, I know, of course, because he's in there. You know, this the guy from Pfizer's in there. The guy from Merck is in there. I always say to people, do have a look at the list just so you can see the amazing kind of
Mark Carney from Canada.
Well, I saw him and I waited till he'd gone past. I got a photo of him. I waited till he'd gone past and I said, hey, Mark. And you know, these people are so groomed to be aloof from everybody. He didn't even turn around. I said, and I shouted out, hey, don't you even know your own name?
You know, oh, Tony.
You know, he tries to be so aloof. Actually, you know, he's one of the wickedest people in the world. He's the guy at the Bank for International Settlements that was responsible for deregulating financial services that led to the 2008 bailouts. You know, this guy is just an operator.
Exactly. BIS. He's in there, BIS and everything.
That's right. So anyway, it's been fun. I always recommend anyone to track down the Bilderbergers and come along to the city wherever they are, because you always meet a whole load of lovely other Bilderberg chasers. I'll just say a couple of things. It's really sad not to see Manfred Petrich here. He was a son of a Nazi who became very vehemently anti-Bilderberg. He pointed out and did a load of research on some of the Nazi people who were at the original Bilderberg meetings in the 1950s. Did some brilliant digging on that, and he sadly died a couple of years ago, so he's one person who's missing from here. The other one died last week, actually, is a guy called Dave Barmby in Britain, who helped me with my book about the links between the Nazis and the Bilderbergers, which is The Traitors of Arnhem, Martin Bormann and the Bilderberg Group. And Dave actually set me off on the course of research in that book, where I actually interviewed Moffat Burris over in the US there, who was one of the, he was a captain in the 82nd Airborne Division at the Battle of Arnhem, who actually pointed his gun at the head of Lord Carrington, who as a young man was sitting in a tank at Nijmegen Bridge, refusing to go and help the British at the Arnhem Bridge. And that was basically what Carrington was doing, was throwing the battle. along with Prince Bernhard, who tipped the Nazis off that they were coming in the Bridge Too Far and Operation Market Garden. So Dave really set me off on it. He helped me through a little, you know, a bit of the research to make this connection between the Operation Market Garden and the setting up of the Bilderbergers, because the, you know, giving the Nazis a few more months in order to squirrel their wealth away around the world gave them the opportunity, which they took, to create a Fourth Reich after the war. And that's really what the Bilderberg, I think, represents. It's kind of called the Bilderberg Conference because the first one was at Oosterbeek in Holland, where this battle took place, where they nicknamed it the Witch's Cauldron because there were so many British paratroopers being killed there. And then, of course, after the war, both Bernhard, who tipped off the Nazis that the British were and the Americans were about to land at Operation Market Garden, and Lord Carrington, who was sitting in his tank refusing to go and help the Brits at the Arnhem Bridge in 1944, both then subsequently became chairman of the Bilderberg Conferences, and Carrington actually was the Secretary General of NATO as well as the Defence Secretary under Margaret Thatcher when the, in fact, actually, no, it's Ted Heath, I think it was, when the Troubles kicked off in Northern Ireland. So when the paratroopers in Northern Ireland shot a load of unarmed civilians and the Troubles in Northern Ireland started in the 1970s, that was Lord Carrington as Defence Secretary at the time. So these are the people who, you know, you've got to watch, basically. The ones that were the traitors during World War II then went on to become some of the main operators of the Bilderbergers and NATO after the war, which was really, I think, integrating a lot of the Nazi thinking into the Allies. And Sullivan and Cromwell's law firm played a big part in that, with the Nazi loot being laudaned through there. So, you know, that's what Bilderberg represents, I think, is a kind of financial Fourth Reich, George. And
right.
That's why I think we need to keep, you know, pursuing them every year, year after year. Charlie Skelton's done a brilliant piece in The Guardian this year. I don't know if you've seen it. It's only out today. Really just taking the mickey out of these people, saying that how dare they come here and try and, you know, use this as an excuse to start World War III. The obvious problem there is that a lot of people that go into these conferences don't want anything to do with that. They'll go down, they'll sit and have lunch, and maybe they'll go along with it. And that's, I suppose, what Bilderberg's about. It's trying to find the people who are stupid enough to be political pliable operators for them, and those are the people that we may well see running the show in the years to come if the Bilderbergers get their way.
Right. Ken Griffin is there, and he's the one that's behind DeSantis in Florida. He was the wealthiest person, $35 billion of wealth in Chicago. He moved to Florida, and now he's backing DeSantis against Trump. But Ken Griffin is there at the Bilderberg.
So are you going to be voting Democrat, do you think, George? You're going to be voting for RFK?
Well, I like what he has to say, but I don't think they'll ever let him into the race. And I think that on Trump, I don't think they'll let him in into the race either, because they've got too many criminal liabilities in the past, and both of those people could represent prosecutions against
some of
those people.
Well, that's what they're going to try. They're certainly going to try. And of course, this is their modus operandi, isn't it? That they want always to have their people. This is a very much a Bilderberg way to operate. You know, they want their people on both sides of the chessboard, whether it's blue or red. But anyway, I think, you know, we should be hoping and encouraging people like RFK and Trump to stand, because it could make an enormous difference to the way.
There is one person that we need to make special note of. Stacey Abrams is at the top of the list, and she's that firebrand black politician out of Georgia. And she was there in Switzerland also, okay, on Lake Geneva, at that Bilderberg meeting over there.
Yeah, well, yeah, these are the sorts of people you've got to watch out for. I just wanted to say one thing before I sign off.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Which is about, I think it's called Kleminsky, this massive explosion on Sunday last week, which apparently was of an arms dump. Now, immediately afterwards, Kleminsky it's called, and it's about halfway between Kiev and the western border of Ukraine. So it's in the western side. But the Russians did a missile attack on this arms dump. There's some film of an absolutely massive explosion in this town. I mean, it's a sort of mushroom cloud style thing that comes up from it after this. You know, obviously when, you know, several months worth of ammunition goes up at one, in a few seconds, then you've got a pretty horrific bang. And, but the big problem was that then there started to be spikes in the gamma radiation detectors in Poland along the border. The day after. So they're saying, well, hang on a minute, what's going on here? Is this uranium that's floating across to see us?
It's the DU ammunition, yeah.
Could be, could well be, yeah. You see, so this has really been covered up for lots of reasons. I think it's pretty clear that there was uranium in that, and there is uranium in that air because it just stays up in the air. It's a few microns of, you know, whatever atoms of uranium, and it doesn't really hit the ground for a long time. It's like a kind of gas, basically. Even though it's a heavy metal, it's not really going down. It's just being swirling around in the air. And so, you know, obviously the Ukrainians don't want to admit this, and neither do the Russians. The Russians don't want to say, oh, we're very sorry, we've just created a massive radiation problem for the Poles. And so there's been basically, since the beginning of the week, pretty much a media blackout. But if you want to find out a bit more about it, go and have a look for Dr. Chris Busby, because he's done a lot of the detection work in the future. He's a former advisor to the British government, and he is convinced that this is a major public health problem. And so this is the weird thing we're in now, is that even though there may be a massive public health problem for the Poles because of the radiation heading their way and actually drifting right across Poland as we speak, there's no discussion about it, George, because the censorship, the military mainly are just making sure that people don't find out about this stuff. Now it's incredibly worrying that something that's such a massive, potentially a massive public health emergency, maybe rather like the dangers of the COVID jabs, and people are just not being told at all. There's no discussion, and it's right out of the public eye. This is what bothers me so much about this story, is that, you know, even if it's not true, we should have some discussion about the possibility, the wisdom of sending ammunition over there that could go up like this and then, you know, just basically drift into a neighboring country, which is supposed to be friendly with us, and cause birth defects there, poison the food chain and all that sort of thing. So this is potentially a massive health emergency, which has been just everyone in the mass media, both East and West, is turning a blind eye.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, Tony. There's a lot of news out there like that that's covered up and a lid put on it, you know.
Yeah, there certainly is. Well, we try and, you know, open these items week by week. The program I do every Friday is thisweek.org.uk is where you'll find it. Right. We have a live stream all the time with people like Richie Allen, who's pretty good over in up in Manchester. We have Webster Tarpley and his we have him on from time to time. His World Crisis Radio is a pretty good and interesting weekly update. So we have all sorts of stuff on the talkradio.org.uk stream. But the weekly show, you'll catch it. I've got an app as well now. You can download the Not the BCFM Politics Show app. That's Not the BCFM Politics Show app. And it bleeps at you a few minutes before we start every Friday to say,
okay. Oh, that's good. That's good, Tony.
I don't know how it works, George, but it works. It's amazing.
Oh, that is good.
And I have to be quite careful that it's not bleeping whilst I'm, you know, actually live.
Okay. Bleep, bleep, de bleep, bleep, right?
That's right. You got it. Anyway, George, lovely to chat to you as ever.
Okay. Tony, thank you for being with us this evening. Thank you for your work down on the ground there.
The relationship we have, us Brits, with the United States is such an important one. And I just think, you know, if we've got the good people in the US and the good people in the UK working together, then these bad guys, these dark enlightenment nutcases, well, they're on a hiding to nothing, George.
Right. They don't. Well, thank you very much, Tony Gosling.
And cheers,
Tony,
George.
Appreciate your work.
God bless.
Okay, cheers.
Bye-bye.
God bless you. Bye-bye. Good night.